This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Later this hour, we're going to get an update on the nonprofit Valerie's House, which provides grief support services to families who have experienced loss at homes in Fort Myers and Punta Gorda. It's going to be opening a permanent home in Naples in August. But first, a little over 6 months ago, Democrat Nikki Fried was sworn into office as Florida's 12th Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services, where she oversees nearly 4,000 employees and a department with regulatory authority over everything from telemarketers to gas pumps to firearm permits to, of course, agribusiness, and what probably feels like just about everything in between. With a background in lobbying for the medical marijuana industry, that's been one of her more prominent issues, along with advocating for a hemp industry in Florida. Despite her daunting responsibilities, Commissioner Fried has carved out some time this afternoon to speak with us about her work on behalf of Floridians. Commissioner Nikki Fried, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely, and thank you for your time today and your wonderful description of the vast and varied responsibilities underneath the department.
It's quite huge. And as always, we invite listeners to join the conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So I thought we'd jump right in, Commissioner Fried, with, I guess, the latest on Friday, legislation creating a regulatory framework that could become, a really robust hemp industry here in Florida was sent to Governor DeSantis. He has until June 29th to act on that bill. Naturally, this is something that you want to see the governor sign into law. I'm wondering if you've spoken with Governor DeSantis about this legislation. Are you fairly confident that he's going to give this the thumbs up?
No, I haven't actually had any direct conversations with the governor, but I certainly have spoken to his chief of staff and his legislative affairs director. And what I keep saying is that if the governor receives one-tenth of the amount of emails and phone calls that we have received from farmers and ranchers and entrepreneurs across the state of Florida in support of hemp, I have no doubt that he will see not only the economic benefits, but really the vitality of our economy and the environmental impacts of having a crop like this that's all biodegradable. So I have pretty good confidence that he will see that this is the vision for the future of our state and will, agree and sign on to the bill.
And in terms of those economic benefits, I've read reports quoting you saying, a hemp industry here in Florida could grow to become a $20 to $30 billion a year industry. Tell me about that just in terms of the widespread potential uses for hemp. Everything from, clothing, textile materials to hempcrete, actual building materials.
Right. And that's where I get, first of all, we have obviously a CBD marketplace already here in the state of Florida. And, I've been very critical of the current marketplace. Those products that are out on the shelves are not regulated. Consumers have no idea what they're purchasing, if there's even CBD in it, if there's THC, if there's other types of metals. So what this program allows is for us to create a regulatory framework to make sure that the products that people are buying are safe for consumption. So just on the CBD marketplace in and of itself, it could be anywhere between a $2 to $3 billion industry. And then the other part is the industrial side. And that's kind of the side that makes me the most excited about the economic impact. That is things to replace styrofoam and plastics and paper and concrete, all of which are better for the environment, biodegradable. We're also seeing reports coming out that it could actually help with our blue-green algae and our red tide because it can go onto the waterways and basically absorb all the toxins that are coming from the waters. So the endless usage, we've known about 25 to 35,000 usages of hemp and known. And so looking forward to bringing that here to the state, making sure that we have an open marketplace and allow our entrepreneurs across the country to come here and invest in the state and allow our farmers the opportunity to create an alternative product and an agriculture product for them to start growing.
Yeah. I mean, are you thinking, have you spoken with maybe citrus growers who have been, struggling with challenges related to greening disease, or maybe even growers in Northwest Florida who've sustained heavy damage from Hurricane Michael last fall? I mean, are they excited about this, trying this out?
They are. They are so excited. I was actually at a Citrus Mutual conference, annual conference last week, where I got to speak to all the citrus growers and actually had a tour of one of the grows right afterwards. And because they were thinking about going into hemp. So the excitement all the way from Homestead all the way up to the Panhandle and certainly you know, our panhandle was so devastated by Hurricane Michael, and giving them this alternative crop while they're reforesting and putting, you know, timber back into the ground, really the excitement is overwhelming. And what I keep hearing is, you know, this is the first time that agriculture across the state of Florida has been so excited about a new product and a new crop. So we are anticipating that there's been a lot of interest in people growing hemp across the state of Florida.
All right. And I wanted to shift focus just a little bit. You know, those timber growers in northwest Florida suffering more than $1 billion in losses from Hurricane Michael last fall. And I didn't realize this until really recently. These growers can't access crop insurance and other forms of assistance the way other agricultural producers might be able to, because timber isn't technically classified as a crop. How is your department working to help these folks?
Yeah, you know, that was one of the first things when I got into office. I went out to the panhandle and I saw firsthand the struggling. I mean, it's just heartbreaking. You know, for those of us, I lived through Hurricane Andrew back in the 90s, and to have been devastated by a Category 5, it is just absolutely heartbreaking. You go out there and you see second, third, fourth generation timber growers, and their entire, you know, life savings or their children's retirement fund is laying on the ground with no end in sight, because you're right, there is no crop insurance. And so unless you had money sitting in the bank to clear out the debris, which would have been, you know, originally $1,500 an acre, is now $1,500 to clear off the land. So it's a $3,000 deficit. So I spend a lot of time in Washington, D.C., lobbying our Florida congressional delegation, as well as other members of the House and the Senate, to be pushing for the disaster package to be released. I got very frustrated, as you probably saw throughout the state. A lot of our elected officials in the panhandle were equally frustrated. And finally, we got the disaster package passed a couple weeks ago, and was actually with Secretary Perdue of the USDA about a week and a half ago, you know, working on block grants, conversations, and grant writing, and making sure that we get the money into the panhandle as soon as possible. And so some of the things that we've been seeing is, you know, we don't want to repeat what has happened before with after Hurricane Irma and the delays, and getting that money there as soon as possible, for not only to allow them to start to kind of clear the land and, you know, have the inspiration and the motivation to keep working on the land and to make sure it stays in agricultural production. But also we have a potential double whammy that with all the timber on the ground, that's 72 million tons, 500 million trees down, that potentially starts the forest fires. And what we saw even, you know, a couple of months ago would have been a 3-4 acre fire within a very short order turn into 600 acres because of all of the timber on the ground. So we're working hard to make sure that we have a seamless process and get these dollars out to our timber industry and our panhandle so they can rebuild their communities.
All right. And I wanted to pivot again and talk about this escalating trade war with China, retaliatory tariffs from China. And that's adding another challenge to these struggling growers here in Florida. Can you tell us a bit about your perspective and what you're seeing in terms of impacts of this trade war on Florida agribusinesses and perhaps other types of businesses in the state?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it, not just China, but, you know, I've been very critical of the renegotiation of NAFTA, what's now considered USMCA,
right,
because of the unfair trade practices from Mexico, doing a lot of illegal dumping into our state with lower labor standards. You know, their country actually subsidizes their growers. And so our markets, our growers can't compete. No one's looking for a handout. Our growers and our farmers are the best in the entire world and are resilient and are fighters. They just want an equal chance. And so what's also happened is we have been in talks with China for years with my department trying to export blueberries. And we were on the verge of a deal, and so we're hoping that these trade wars and the tariffs aren't going to jeopardize that. But we're seeing it already in the timber industry and what we have been shipping out to China, and so the paper industry. So we've seen a lot already impacted, and hopefully we can kind of stop it and, you know, allow our industry to stabilize again.
All right. And I wanted to shift again, talking about medical marijuana. Very early into your term, you named Holly Bell as cannabis director. And then more recently, we've seen the names of the Agriculture Department's newly created Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee. Tell me about the purpose of this committee. I'm kind of getting the impression its primary goals relate to, you know, increasing patient access to medical marijuana.
Yeah, absolutely. The goal of the committee is kind of twofold. One is their committee is going to have a lot of phone conversations and conferences, but also be touring around the state to educate doctors, educate patients, and let everybody know what's happening here in the state. But more importantly, we are wanting to hear from the patients. We want to hear from the consumers and see what are things that are happening on the ground that the program is working on or that it's not working. And then my goal is to have this committee, which is diverse between, we have some of our license holders who are in the middle of it, to patients, to veterans, to doctors, and really are trying to find, you know, how in an ideal world, what would the program in the state of Florida look like? And then once we've kind of gone through this data and listened to everybody, you know, basically present ideas and legislation to the legislature. These are ways to fix it to make sure that we not only have access, but affordable access. You know, and that's going after, you know, making sure we have health insurance. We've seen a trend across the country now talking about employment, you know, making sure that employers don't fire an employee if they, you know, end up being positive for having THC in the system. Of course, with the exemption of, you know, firefighters and first responders and truck drivers and bus drivers. But outside of that, you know, we really want to make sure that we're creating an environment that if somebody feels that they need access to medical marijuana to get off of opiates or other pharmaceutical drugs, that they have equal access to get off it and change their quality of life. So the committee is going to be really essential to come up with ideas and goals and really create an opportunity to kind of steer the ship when it comes to medical marijuana here in the state of Florida.
And, you know, as we all know, the initial rollout of the medical marijuana industry here in Florida certainly had its challenges. That's maybe a bit of an understatement. How do you see the Department of Agriculture, or how is the Department of Agriculture working with the Department of Health's Office of Medical Marijuana Use to continue to improve that?
You know, we're in constant communication because, as you may know, and maybe a lot of people in the state of Florida don't know, is that I don't actually regulate it. You know, it was obviously a big, you know, issue of mine that during the campaign and continued to be a tremendous advocate, but we don't oversee it.
Right.
So we have been lending my expertise as well as Holly's expertise, Holly Bell's, to the Department of Health and saying, look, you know, we certainly want to be a partnership in all of this. It's a win-win for the state when we are working together. So we have already drafted the edibles rule. There's two segments to it, one that my department runs and one the Department of Health. So we've already drafted ours, and we are working with the department for theirs. Same thing with third-party testing, and especially when it comes to the plant itself. You know, we're the Department of Agriculture. Our experts inside of our office are the best in the world when it comes to pests and disease and molds and fertilizers and pesticides. So really working with the Department of Health to look at the expertise that our department can offer and see how we can't work together on some of this. And know that we're certainly not trying to power grab by any stretch of imagination. We really just want to see this as a seamless process for our patients and expanded access for everybody.
All right. For folks maybe just tuning into today's show, we're speaking with Florida Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services, Nikki Fried, about her first 6 months in office so far. If you'd like to add your comments or questions to the conversation, you can connect with us via social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Commissioner Fried, under your predecessor, the Department of Agriculture had some issues with not properly vetting concealed carry permit applicants. That resulted in ultimately the revocation of nearly 300 firearm permits. You know, given that Florida leads the nation on this with some 2 million concealed carry permit holders, that was certainly a concerning oversight to learn about. Since taking office, again, a little over 6 months ago, what have you been able to do to make sure that that kind of issue doesn't happen again?
Yeah, you know, that was one of the big concerns that I had during the campaign and now as commissioner, is to make sure that when somebody applies for a concealed weapons, they do have a complete and accurate background check in a timely manner. And so we also were seeing that when we came into office, there's a statutory requirement to receive a response from the department within 90 days. We actually stepped in, and the applications were taking about 93 days, which obviously is not okay. And so we came in, and we replaced the division director as well as the division assistant director, changed some internal protocols, and so we had everybody working overtime to catch up from the 93 days. And I'm happy to report that we are down to actually 45 days reviewing of the application. So we've been able to cut in half by while still doing our jobs. The other thing we also saw in the department is that there was a lot of part-time employees that were reviewing the applications. And I said that was absolutely irresponsible. And the last thing I wanted is somebody who is, you know, on the clock, waiting to clock out, one hand on their cell phones and one eye on the computer reviewing that. So I requested from the legislature, and they have, in fact, put that into the budget, which was, again, sent to the governor on Friday, over 25 new full-time positions to make sure that we can keep up with the demand in our department to process in a timely manner and to make sure that those part-time employees actually are full-time employees. So we've been able to do a lot, and it's kind of, you know, funny. I was first taking office, and there was a lot of criticism on the fact that I'm a Democrat, and people were concerned that as a Democrat, I was going to come in and take people's guns.
Well, you're a gun owner yourself.
I am. And that's exactly my point. I have a concealed weapons. I have a gun. And I'm an attorney. And so, of course, I'm going to follow the law and to make sure that it's done in a timely manner. So we've come in, we've cleaned up the program, and we're doing it in a more efficient and timely manner.
And in conversations you and I had last year on the campaign trail, we had discussed this possibility of maybe even moving this firearm permitting vetting process over to another agency like the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Is that something you're still maybe looking to do down the road?
Yeah, no, we have vetted a little bit. There was one bill that had been filed in the Senate to review that. And we spent a lot of time talking to stakeholders across the state and to the other elected officials and to FDLE, who were, it was proposed that that was going. And after we've been able to clean up the program and have terrific leadership in place, we might make some internal shifts as far as just administration internally, but we feel pretty confident that we can handle the program and it will not need to be going anywhere else.
All right. And pivoting again, you recently returned from your first trade mission as Ag Commissioner to Israel. Lots of meetings with government officials, agricultural research groups, agriculture-related businesses. Tell us about the trip and what's come out of it or what potentially might be coming out of it in the future.
It was an absolutely incredible, amazing trip. We met with about 50 to 70 different companies throughout the entire state. And so we saw companies that were doing research on medical marijuana, which is about 10 or 20 years ahead of us as far as advancements on different kind of clinical research that they're doing. They've been able to break down the cannabis plant and really do some research that, you know, we need here in the state. But then we saw companies that were doing tremendous research on citrus greening, not only an early detection of the plant and the disease, but also different ways to cure it. And so we're looking to partner some of that technology with our citrus growers and try to use some of that stuff here on our own land. Then we saw things from different types of drone technology coming from, actually picking the fruit right off of the trees. We saw different ones dealing with precision agriculture and hydroponics. Different genetics on watermelons and different fruits and crops that we could start growing here, different ways to preserve it and conserve our waterways. We actually saw one company that creates water out of air, uses the humidity of the air to create water. So talking about different ways of utilizing that after disasters and emergency times to make sure we can get water quickly to those areas, potentially using it in schools to keep the water fountains that potentially still have lead in them out of the schools. So now it's a lot of its follow-up. You know, we saw a lot of great companies, and my goal now is to connect them to our industry here. So we're discussing different types of trade shows or different types of road shows where the Minister of Agriculture from Israel comes over with 10 or 15 different companies over there and really kind of comes around the state of Florida meeting with our growers and producers and come up with new ways. Because I've always said that in order for us to move forward with agriculture here in the state, we need to bring this new technology and innovation, not only to inspire the next generation to be involved in agriculture, but really we have natural resources that will eventually, we'll utilize and use up. And so we need to do everything we can to preserve our waterways and to make sure that we have, in fact, best management practices when it comes to the usage of the land. So the things that we saw there, even we saw a company that is just coming to the United States that has ways to tackle the blue-green algae. So, again, just amazing things that we saw there. It really came back inspired to bring this technology to our agriculture community, and finding ways to partnership and do joint ventures between our growers here and the technology in Israel. So they're startup capital of the world, and now they're trying to find ways to commercialize their products. And we've got the best growers in the world. So this partnership between the two really is going to advance the state of Florida. I keep saying that I want Florida to be the Silicon Valley of agriculture, and see that the partnership with a lot of the Israeli companies is the way forward.
Wow. Sounds like we're going to be hearing echoes from this first trade mission throughout your first term. That's a lot of potential there. I wanted to switch gears again here because last month you appointed your department's first ever LGBTQ consumer advocate. Are issues of discrimination and fraud that target this demographic something that Florida, generally speaking, has overlooked? Why create this new position?
Yeah, that's exactly why. I also created a Veterans Affairs position, and as well as an inclusion and diversity position, because my goal was to figure out, as the consumer side of my job, is where are there communities that have been unrepresented when it comes to issues in Tallahassee and who have been targeted over the years with different types of product lines and consumer issues. So we felt that having somebody solely dedicated to be the voice of those communities so that when, in fact, fraud or types of scams that are happening specifically targeted to any of those communities, that they've got a champion, and that information gets right back to us. So already, Nick has been traveling the entire state and has done an amazing job representing that community and the consumer side of our position.
Right. And, with summer on the way, folks here in Southwest Florida in particular are wary of the potential for another summer of harmful algal blooms. And, of course, fertilizer runoff from agriculture operations plays a role in terms of nutrient pollution that can set off or exacerbate these toxic blooms. Now, you're not head of the Department of Environmental Protection, but what role do you see the Department of Agriculture playing when it comes to broader efforts to address harmful algal blooms and water quality protections?
Yeah, so we have the best management practices that are already in place across the state. So our job is to make sure that we are enlisting and enrolling all of our agriculture producers and farmers and ranchers onto our program. But also every few years, every 5 years, we have to actually reevaluate to make sure that the best management practices are actually best management practices. And so I see kind of, again, going back to Israel and seeing the new technology, is eventually bring those in there, because now there is better management practices that we can learn from other countries. But the other thing, too, is starting to look at the homeowner. We see that while, yes, agricultural land uses a lot of fertilizers, but we also have to understand that the homeowner, as we keep expanding development across the state, that more and more homeowners are coming into the state and, are maybe not aware of the harmful effects of using so much fertilizers on their land and different types of pesticides. So a lot of that is education on our part, working with our local government and our state government to try to find ways to curb some of this, to make sure that if you've got, a small patch of brown on your land, putting 5 bags of fertilizer, all that's going to do is increase the runoff that's coming from that home. So there's a lot of work to be done, and we need to have a comprehensive plan, which is what I've been saying from day one. Everybody needs to stop the finger pointing at who's the fault here. It's irrelevant at this point, but let's find out the solution. And let's all sit down on the table. I know the governor did appoint a Blue Green Algae Task Force. My new water policy director is planning on doing a presentation, if he hasn't already done so already, and really working on partnering with CEP and coming up with solutions, outside-the-box solutions, to make sure that, your community in particular was hammered with not only the blue-green algae, but in the red tide. And so we really need to make sure that we are providing all of our best resources to fix these problems, because we can't have another summer with this double whammy of the blue-green algae and the red tide. And I spoke to so many of your fishermen out in your community and just telling me that there are heart-wrenching stories from last summer of what this did to your community. And, I know that myself, as well as Governor Santis, are really engaged in fighting this fight.
All right. And final question for you, Commissioner. You're the lone Democrat among elected officials who make up the Florida cabinet. So that seems like one area where partisan differences would certainly be prominent. But on the other hand, the majority of what you're responsible for with the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services really doesn't seem partisan in nature at all. I was wondering if you could contrast those roles.
It's it's definitely not easy. But what I've been saying all along, that we as a cabinet are putting state before party, which is what you should expect from all of your elected officials. And so when the policies is coming out from the cabinet and from the Department of Agriculture, it's about the people and it's not about the partisan politics. You know, of course, every once in a while, I need to get involved in some of the fights that are bigger than just ag. I have been very vocal on any of the abortion bills that may be proposed in the next legislative cycle. So some of those things I do have to be vocal on and maybe more partisan in nature. But for all intents and purposes, everyday policy decisions is not D versus R. It's what is best for the state of Florida.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the show. But thanks so much to our guest. We're speaking with Florida Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services, Nikki Fried. Thanks so much for taking the time and catching up with us.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks for having me on today.
All right. We're taking a short break, but when we return, WGCU's Julie Glenn is going to get an update on the nonprofit Valerie's House, which just received a funding boost from the Naples Children and Education Foundation to open a new permanent home in Naples. She'll talk with its founder and a woman and her two daughters who've received help from the nonprofit. I'm John Davis, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.